Good jobs, quality jobs.
We still have so much to do for women's rights.
For the parents to go to work, you need good childcare.
We will not have a successful recovery if we leave social rights.
Reinventing our way of building and living.
It is our right.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of Eurofan Talks. Today, Eurofan talks green transition and particularly the impact on employment. Will there, won't be an impact, and will it be positive or negative? In today's context and as part of today's discussion, we're clearly going to be talking about climate change and environmental degradation. We all know it's happening, and certainly at the beginning of November this year, we have already heard from EU scientists that 2023, the year that we are operating in, is set to be the warmest of the past 125,000 years. So we know that change is happening, and we can see the impacts on a day-to-day basis, storms, floods. We see heat rising, and we see changes across our economies and our societies as a result. There's no doubt that we need to make changes, and we see them at a personal level, at the individual level, at societal level, and indeed at global level to some degree. Perhaps not enough, but the EU has set out to do its part to address some of these issues, and has looked to become the first climate neutral continent with net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. It's an ambitious target, but it is the target that the EU policymakers and indeed national level policymakers in the EU have agreed to and have set this as an objective. To achieve this, it means that we have this context within which we operate, the European Green Deal. And as part of that, there is a policy package which is called Fit for 55. This was agreed in 2021, and it contains decarbonisation objectives which are aimed at making sure that we reach this 55% emission reduction target by 2030, based on the 1990 levels. These objectives are important for Europe, clearly, and they will definitely have an impact on many aspects of our lives and work. But I suppose one of the core questions is, how will it impact on our economies? And more specifically, how will it impact on employment? Will we see changes that are good for our societies, or are we going to see changes that will have a detrimental effect? Of course, the European green transition is part of the twin transition, digital occurring in parallel. And while we have looked in the past at the impact of digital changes, today is the European Green Deal and its impact. We want to make sure as part of this that no one is left behind and no place is left behind. And the question is this achievable? And I'm hoping today, as I'm joined by John Hurley, who's a co-author of a new European study on this, that he will have some of the answers at least to this question. John Hurley is a senior research manager here at Eurofound and has worked on labour market issues for many years. Welcome, John.
Welcome, Mary. Thank you.
So, John, let's get straight down to it. Will this Fit for 55 program and, by extension, the broader carbon reduction measures, will it actually have a negative or a positive effect on jobs in Europe?
Well, according to our estimates, which are based on a macroeconomic model, which is used by a lot of the EU institutions and which we used for this study, we reckon that there will be small marginal gains in employment on a 2030 horizon. But, you know, really very small. We're talking about 0.1% of employment, around 200,000 jobs in a labour market, which is around 200 million jobs. So that's in the core scenario. One qualification of that is that these estimated gains come on top of the gains that were already estimated based on the Paris Climate Agreement objectives. So, which were of a larger order. When we did an earlier version of these estimations, we estimated that there would be 0.5% employment gains based on implementing policies in line with the Paris climate objectives. So in total, we're talking about possibly in the order of 1 million net new jobs arising from all of the carbon decarbonisation policies that the EU has been pursuing on a decade-long perspective. So, yeah,
okay.
Small gains, but gains nonetheless.
Gains nonetheless. And I suppose the important thing here is, as you say, you're talking about an overall maybe 1 million net new jobs as a result of this. Clearly, that means also some jobs are going to be lost in different sectors and different places and different countries. Can we drill down a little bit and do a little bit of a deep dive as to where those jobs will be created and lost in terms of sectors, perhaps in terms of countries?
Well, okay, just to be precise again, you know, the small gains that we're estimating arise from the implementation of the Fit for 55 policies. So specifically these policies that were introduced in the last number of years and which effectively accelerate the decarbonisation policies of the EU as a whole.
And that's an important point to make, John, because what we're talking about here is applying the Fit for 55 measures. Other people, other agencies and institutions are looking at different methodologies which perhaps have a different basis for that calculation.
Yeah, and it's also important to say that the Fit for 55 is a package of policies. It's an evolving package of policies. A lot of the targets and objectives that we were modeling here have actually changed and become more ambitious subsequently, including the renewable energy share. The objectives in that regard are more ambitious than they were when we did this modelling exercise.
So it's sort of an ongoing changing process.
It's an ongoing changing process. Fit for 55 marked an acceleration of existing policy, decarbonisation policy, to be more ambitious. And then subsequently, they're becoming more ambitious again.
Okay.
So that's an important point to make. And it's just important to say that the very modest employment gains that we're talking about in this particular report relate to the Fit for 55 policies and the particular policies that we were able to incorporate in the
which
model.
Will account for any different types of figures we're seeing across different places where people are making different types of predictions.
Well, in general, I mean, we start the report by looking at the other evidence from our colleagues in CEDEFOP, but from other agencies from other pieces of research. And what I would say is that in general, our estimates of modest and net employment gains is more or less a consensus amongst all of the attempts to model. To model the impacts of climate change or of climate change policy. So it's I don't think we're out of I think we're in the range of the estimates that we see. They're either very 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 minorly negative or very very minorly positive.
Okay, so let's get down to the detail. Where are the sectors that we will see growth, and where will we see loss, and what countries will be least or most affected?
Okay, well, on a 2030 horizon, I mean, first of all, what we do in this analysis is we look at a baseline scenario, which is basically a business as usual scenario. And in the business as usual scenario, we forecast that there'll be about 6.7 million net new jobs in the EU in 2030 compared to 2019. So that's about 3.5% increase in employment. The Fit for 55 policies introduces an extra 200,000 jobs to that figure. So that's it's again reasonably modest amount, but it is nonetheless a small modest gain. It's not a loss. In terms of the sectors that will be impacted, the one sector that really stands out as being impacted is construction. Positively, they're very very strong. Construction sector implications from decarbonisation policy in terms of retrofitting existing homes, insulating homes, also in actually just the construction effort required to build new facilities that will build wind turbines, build the renewable energy infrastructure in more generally. So we foresee that there'll be about 300,000 net new jobs in construction in Europe. So construction alone accounts for more than 100% of the net gains arising from Fit for 55. Sectors that will lose, well, clearly mining and extractive industries, very unsurprisingly, will lose. But again, their losses will be less than those that we will gain in construction. I mean, I think it's very important to say that the mining extractive sector in Europe is quite small. It accounts for 1 in 400 jobs. So around 500,000 people are working in the mining sector. And it has been contracting anyway for all sorts of other reasons for many, many years. So decarbonisation is probably going to accelerate that process, but it has been an ongoing process anyway. And then agriculture would be one of the other sectors that will be that will also be affected. It has high levels of non-CO2 emissions, in nitrous oxide, methane and the like. These are hard to abate. And, you know, it is, it's also a sector which in any case is in structurally contracting in terms of employment and has been for many years. But we also foresee that there will be employment losses in agriculture.
And is that sort of sectoral division reflected well in terms of country or geographical location of these jobs?
Well, it, what it means, I guess, is that regions and countries which have a higher share of mining or extractive employment, or indeed agricultural employment, will tend to be more negatively affected. Construction tends to be reasonably evenly dispersed across the member states and across regions. But it's fair to say that, you know, we can identify regions such as some of the southern Polish regions, some Romanian regions, which have an ongoing dependence is the wrong word, but they have a high share of mining employment, and it's in those regions that we see significant employment losses foreseen in the modelling.
Okay, so some countries definitely affected more than others. And I suppose, did you look, John, at how that could potentially affect mobility of workers? So if you're in greater need of construction workers, will we see a rise in the level of intra-EU mobility when it comes to construction workers moving to the different countries that will require that kind of work?
Well, I mean, as I said, construction employment tends to be reasonably dispersed across across the member states. There will be, there are construction shortage, labour shortages in lots of countries which are actually losing workers to net emigration in Eastern Europe. So I'm not sure if we should be looking for mobility, intra-EU mobility to resolve the issues of labour shortages in the construction sector. I think we have labour shortages in the West, the East, the North and the South in this particular sector.
Not necessarily a driver.
I mean, I think the great driver for mobility, especially for people with mobile skills, as a lot of construction workers would have, is just the draw of higher wages in one country.
So the working conditions in the sectors, which we've talked about before in other podcasts, actually.
I think pay is probably the most important draw for construction sectors if they want to move from one place to another.
And maybe just moving on a little bit from that, what kind of jobs, you know, do you, I mean, we've talked about construction clearly here as being one of the main winners, I suppose, if you want to see it in that way. But are there other jobs, for example, which would be considered high quality, well paid jobs that we could see? Is that where the growth will be, or is it mostly in lower quality, low paid jobs?
Well, it's not in low quality or low paid jobs necessarily. But, you know, one of the things that, in a project we call the European Jobs Monitor, which looks at the changing structure of employment over the last three decades in Europe. And one of the core findings of that research is that the demand for high-paid jobs and jobs requiring high level of skills has been persistently greater than for any lower mid-qualified jobs. And that process seems to have strengthened in the last 10 years, and it's even strengthened even further during the COVID years. So the employment growth has been really almost exclusively and in the top quintile of paid jobs. What's interesting about these forecasts or projections is that Most of the net new gains are foreseen in the middle of the job wage distribution, primarily, as I said, in construction. And so, you know, this might actually be effectively, I guess what we're saying is that decarbonisation policy, according to these projections, will actually sustain demand for the types of jobs which have actually been in disfavour in the labour market for the last couple of decades.
Okay, that's an interesting development, actually. In terms of that, again, another link into that is the skills aspect. I mean, clearly you've identified some of the skills that will be less relevant in this context and some that will be more. But this year being the European Year of Skills, can you see where we might be seeing skills profiles that we would need to enhance, perhaps, or that we would need to develop to be able to respond to these requirements?
Well, I think it's clear that if we look in particular at construction, there are new use cases which are decarbonisation use cases in the construction sector. I wouldn't necessarily talk about skills because you know, the study is more about occupations and sectors. But it's clear that a lot of the member states now have targets for the installation of air to heat pumps or groundwater to heat pumps. These require new skills. In most cases, the objectives are not being met. You know, in other words, the actual objectives for installation are not being met at country level. They remain very, very ambitious in many cases. The skills required are probably not that different from the gas boiler installer in many cases. Or at least there is some modification of the kind of skill sets that existing gas boiler installers would have. But we are slow at converting one type of skill, which is largely deployed using fossil fuels, to a more sustainable forms of domestic heating. So certainly we need more solar panel installers. We need more residential heating installers. So we need a transformation of the skills. But, you know, these are skills that it should not require too much of a reconversion effort on the part of the existing construction firms to do so.
And did we look at who would be better placed to kind of provide that, to stimulate that, or to ensure that they benefit from the growth in these areas?
Well, there are lots of existing subsidies to do these types of conversion, and again, what we observe is that despite the subsidies, there still is a degree of tardiness in the actual adaptation of the workforce, the construction workforce, to, you know, to ramp up to the level that the objectives that have been set at national level and at European level would require.
But there you're referencing the recovery and resilience funds and the funds at EU level and at national level that are available.
Well, there's a lot of European funding, but then there's a lot of also national subsidies. In this country, we have very, very ambitious targets in terms of heat pump installation by 2030. So, you know, there's a lot of funding instruments at national, regional and EU level.
Can you just give me an idea? People talk all the time about different types of jobs. You've got white jobs, you've got, you know, blue collar jobs, you've got, you know, green jobs, you've even got brown jobs now. Can you talk to us, what do we believe to be a green job and how does it differentiate from those others?
Okay, well, I have to confess, I'm a bit skeptical about these designations and these categorizations, especially of green jobs. When we think of jobs, we normally think of occupations and sectors. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a nurse in the health sector, a craft and trades worker in the construction sector, something like that. Just, you know, with reference to that last category, because this is the type of job that we're saying is going to, that there will be increased demand for, according to this study. Well, you can say that there are very green versions of that job and very non-green versions of that job. A gas boiler installer and somebody who's installing something which relies on fossil fuels, I would say is not that's not a green job. I would say that somebody with a modest change of skill sets and who's installing air to heat pumps, In residential dwellings is a green job. But in terms of our understanding of jobs as occupations and sectors, both are occupying exactly the same niche.
Yeah.
So I'm a little bit skeptical about the idea of green jobs.
Defining them in that, yeah.
And what I would think is a more useful way of thinking of, is in terms of green use cases. We know that if you're installing solar panels on the roofs of a house, that you're doing something which is going to reduce emissions and is more sustainable. We know that if you're installing an air to heat pump in a house, you're also doing something which is going to, is intended to and should reduce emissions, and again is more sustainable. So these are concrete use cases, and I prefer to think of use cases rather than green jobs.
Okay. Maybe moving on to a slightly connected, but I suppose more societal issue, which is in recent research that we carried out, the Living and Working and COVID-19 e-survey, we looked particularly at trust. Now, trust is something that's monitored on an ongoing basis across the European Union, at regional level, at national level, etc. And it can be in national governments, it can be in institutions, in the media, and indeed in the EU itself. We've seen that trust declined since COVID-19, since the end of the pandemic. I suppose the worry at both EU and national level would be, if that trend continues, will it be further exacerbated by these kind of, we say there's a very moderate growth in overall jobs being created. And of course, we're only talking about Fit for 55 here. But when we look at this, is there a danger that these changes will actually exacerbate this decline in trust?
What I would say on that front is that the loss of jobs that we foresee in some which are concentrated in some sectors, such as mining and extractive or agriculture. These account for a reasonably small proportion of the working population. To me, I'm not sure if they're going to exacerbate problems of declining trust in institutions. I think possibly the danger is more that there is a perception that the whole decarbonisation policy is adapts better to certain classes of people who tend to be well off anyway, that there are people who can afford to buy an electric vehicle with a subsidy
and install solar panels in their houses
Solar panels in their houses, and that's all very well, but for a lot of other people, the rise in the cost of petrol or of electricity
is another element of their cost of living crisis.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just something which adds to their daily cost of living travails. So I would say that these are the types of schism that are probably more likely to undermine decarbonisation policy and to foment feelings of mistrust.
Division, in fact. Yeah.
Indeed. Yeah.
And those kind of these divisions, these deep-rooted inequalities or perceived inequalities, which are across the board available, evident in other areas also.
Yeah, it's probably more as consumers than as workers that some of these divisions will reveal themselves. Yeah,
interesting, actually. I mean, one of the other inequalities, of course, that comes into play when we have these discussions is men and women and the ongoing differences and divides that there are in that area. We know that Europe has a very segregated labour market when it comes to gender. We know that in particular, there are sectors that are particularly badly affected in this regard. Construction is one of these. So are we looking at another aspect? We see a growth in construction over the next period of time, but does that mean automatically that we're going to be seeing a decline in women's participation in the labour market as a result? Is it just going to add to our issues in terms of trying to close the gender employment gap and indeed the pay gap?
What we found is that basically sectors which are predominantly female employing have tended to have better and stronger employment growth over the last two or three decades than sectors in which males are predominant. So a lot of the sectors that we've actually discussed, including construction, which is going to, we think is going to gain employment. You're quite right. It's a very, very gender unbalanced sector. There's less than 10% of construction employment is female, and that hasn't changed much in the last two decades. But other sectors like agriculture, manufacturing, mining are these are in secular decline anyway. Mm-hmm. That secular decline is going to be exacerbated by decarbonization policy. And these are sectors where men are, these are predominantly male employing sectors. So what I would say is that, you know, the evidence that we have from other research is that 2/3 of net employment growth in the EU over the last 2 decades has been female. That's what's contracting our gender employment gap. I think there's a, I think for structural reasons, for the reasons I've just indicated, it's likely that the gender employment gap will continue to contract. Even in the post-COVID, you know, in the last few years since the beginning of the COVID pandemic, we have had very significant female employment growth once the recovery started.
It
may have been that women lost jobs predominantly in the first initial year of the crisis, but during the recovery, it's women who have been taking the lion's share of net new employment from 2021 onwards. And I think that decarbonisation and policy in general will just accelerate the shift towards services employment. Around 3/4 of our workforce now works in services, and the majority of women work in services. So I think decarbonisation policy probably won't do anything to harm the contraction of the gender employment gap.
So you would actually say, on the basis of the evidence, that you're seeing a good news story coming down the tracks more generally, if we move away from Fit for 55 entirely, but from a female participation perspective?
I would say so. I would say that services is where the majority of women work, and services should be boosted by the kind of induced income effects from the all of the investment that will be required to decarbonize our societies. And I think, you know, on the positive side for men is that in one or two sectors where they are predominant, such as construction, there will be new employment opportunities. And there will be employment opportunities for men, not necessarily with third level qualifications. And so again,
these middle quintile
mid-paid jobs, more trades related jobs.
Okay, interesting. Well, hopefully we can come back in a couple of years, John, and revisit that, and I hope that you have right on your side at that stage. So I think we've been through a lot, and a lot of what you've said is actually positive. I think the takeaway is that it's a small advance in terms of the impact of the Fit for 55 policy package in terms of employment, but also in other areas. I would say that what you've said in terms of the package evolving and the measures becoming more ambitious is an interesting one, because we will see changes and how that impacts on an ongoing basis. So that's also something to keep an eye on. If you were to take away to a policymaker that you meet on the street or in the elevator, and you had 2 minutes to put your three main points to them, can you talk to me about what they would be? Talk to me, as we say, in three.
Well, what I would say is that, you know, the main finding from at a sectoral level in this analysis is that there will be a significant boost to construction sector employment. The construction sector is one of the very, very few sectors where employment levels in 2023 in the EU27 as a whole are below where they were in 2008, 15 years ago. We've lost construction sector employment in that period. Even in manufacturing, we have significantly more people working in manufacturing now than pre-global financial crisis.
So essentially from the Great Recession, we haven't seen it regain its position.
It never recovered, and it still hasn't recovered. And it's also a sector in which we have ongoing labor shortages in many of our countries, many of our member states. So I would say that we need to look at the quality of work in construction in the sector. We need to look at the structure of employment more generally and try and encourage people to participate in this sector. We need something of a trades revolution as well, because the skills that are required to actually decarbonize or to lower the emissions coming from residential housing, they are adaptations of what existing construction workers or gas boiler installers do, but they are modifications. It requires a new skill set. So there needs to be a bit of a trades revolution and a reskilling en masse in the construction sector. You know, one of the other findings, this is at a much broader level, and it's more to do with fiscal policy. In the modelling, we also look at different implementations of the Fit for 55 policies and different ways of recycling the revenues that we get from, for example, the emissions trading system, from carbon taxes. We have very significant carbon tax revenues now in the EU. They're up to around 40 billion euros a year. That's a very, very, very significant chunk of money. One of the things that we model in one of the variants of the main scenario in this exercise was to look at what would happen if we reduce labor taxation, both on the employer and the employee side, by channeling the carbon tax income to defray the costs of these reduced labor taxes. And in that situation, we do have very significantly higher net employment gains. We're talking about, instead of being 0.1%, it's around 0.4% net employment gains at European level. So how you actually use the income that you get from decarbonisation policy, and in particular from carbon taxes, and how you redeploy them, and ideally to reduce the burden of labour taxation, that can have a very, very significant impact on the net employment outcomes.
And John, are those different options still being discussed, or is this...
Well, these are ongoing sources of discussion. We don't... There's a certain amount of earmarking of the emission trading system incomes and revenues, but to a certain extent these are all open and evolving questions. As we were saying earlier, decarbonisation policy evolves literally,
daily.
Daily, and so there are new targets, there are new ways of thinking about things. The carbon taxes are probably the keystone of European decarbonisation policy, and I guess what we're saying in this particular variant of the main model, we're trying to see, are there different ways of actually using the revenues to reduce distortionary labor taxes, and possibly, that could have some positive labor market outcomes.
But of course, that's at national level, because these are taxation policies
and decisions
at a national level.
Sure, sure.
And so what you're suggesting here, if I'm understanding correctly, is that national policymakers would be well advised to consider what they would like as an outcome if you want to see these kind of improvements in employment rates as a result of this calculation here, that there are ways of adjusting the taxation take, if you like, which could have a beneficial impact.
Well, most of the carbon tax revenues do end up in the national treasuries. They don't end up anywhere else. So these are possibilities. How you actually repurpose these revenues and how you use them is still something that national policymakers do have some influence.
Can affect. Well, that's certainly something that would be of interest to policymakers in the elevator or elsewhere. And I think also this aspect of the trades revolution that does require some level of reskilling, upskilling, but also requires access to the information and the funding that's available at EU level and at national level to ensure that that can be implemented effectively. Well, thank you very much, John. You've been really a source of information on this issue and much more today. Thank you for joining us today.
It's been my pleasure.
I would like to just draw attention to our listeners that many of the issues that we've talked about today touch on so many of the other podcasts and information that we have available. Job quality, for example, labour shortages, indeed even essential workers, as we had in our most recent podcast. And of course, the perennial issue of gender equality and so much more. I think what John has given us in terms of information shows how interrelated this particular issue of Fit for 55 and its implementation and the impact on the employment market has on so many other of the issues that we deal with ongoing at Eurofound. And of course, as always, you can find this podcast and all of the others on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else that you access your podcasts. And the Fit for 55 Climate Package Impact on EU Employment by 2030 report is already available on Eurofound's website that you can download and follow. And indeed, you can follow this subject and any other on our website and, of course, on our social media channels. So tune in ongoing. And so until next time, when Eurofound talks to you.
Good jobs, quality jobs.
We still have so much to do for women's rights.
For the parents to go to work, you need good childcare.
We will not have a successful recovery if we leave social rights.
Reinventing our way of building and living.
It is our right.